Okay, welcome to Creative Disturbance. This is the Femgineers podcast, dedicated to the voice of women in engineering. My name is Matt Brown. I'm the director of the Center for Values in Medicine, Science, and Technology. And I'm talking with Heather Hyinga, assistant professor in the UT Dallas Department of Bioengineering. So welcome, Heather.
Thank you.
Okay. Could you start off by telling us a little bit about your work?
Yeah, so my lab is the Vascular Mechanobiology Lab, in which we have pretty much half of the lab is computational. And so we're looking at how perturbations in blood pressure and metabolic factors can lead to cardiovascular diseases like hypertension and atherosclerosis. And then in the lab, we're looking at kind of quantifying some of the ways that mechanobiology can affect the development of these diseases.
Okay, cool. Could you tell us a little bit about how you got interested in engineering?
So for me in college, I was undeclared physical sciences for 2 years. So I liked math and biology, but I wasn't really sure what my major should be. After 2 years, they say you need to decide on a major or you get kicked out of college. So I basically made a spreadsheet of all the courses I took up to that point and which major they best fit into. And biomedical engineering was the major. So I said, okay, I'll give it a try. And I loved it. It's a good fit.
Was there something particular in your early life that led you to the interest in mathematics and biology?
So I think in third grade, I had a teacher who gave us these kind of math, simple equations, addition, subtraction, multiplication. And it was a speed test. So you had 100 equations and the faster you could get done, then you would get kind of a check mark by your name and you would get an ice cream cone at the end of the year if you got the most check marks. So I just really loved math and the ways that I think the teachers kind of presented it to me. In AP biology, in California is where I'm from, she took us to the San Diego Zoo. And we had a field trip and we looked at all the animals and the kingdom, the class, the phylum. Mm-hmm. We had to characterize everything. So I would say my teachers are really what motivated me to like math and biology.
Great. What motivated you to choose to work on the particular projects you're working on now?
So I think with any kind of work you do, you have to be passionate about it. So my passion came from in 2005, my father passed away of a heart attack. And I just kind of realized the magnitude of cardiovascular diseases. And they're taking people at a pretty young age. He was only 52. So that's what motivated me to go in that specific area. And that passion, kind of understanding the magnitude of this disease, helps me get up, you know, every day and kind of work towards finding a solution to better diagnose people who do have chest pain and who are, you know, symptomatic of a cardiovascular disease, how we can diagnose that plaque in their artery and decide if we need to treat it with a bypass or a stent or, you know, go forward. So that's kind of how the predictive modeling mm-hmm. enables people who have chest pain. They get an image taken and they can say, okay, your plaque is going to rupture in 2 weeks, or no, based on our simulations, it's going to rupture and in 20 years, you're fine. You don't need to do this invasive surgery.
How quickly do you think these changes, this is going to result in changes in the medical field? Do you see major changes a few years down the road or 10 years down the road in the way that we do diagnosis for these diseases?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. The biomarkers are a hot field, so we're identifying more biomarkers within the blood, within saliva, and just any kind of genomic analysis that can help tell people, okay, you're predisposed to a disease or you are symptomatic, you need to change your lifestyle or start taking some pharmaceutical to better your condition. We're obviously doing all these kind of smart bits and other kind of ways to monitor and track our personal health. And I think potentially one day, MRIs, if they ever get cheap enough, people will get a full body MRI and start identifying little areas, lumps, or problematic areas sooner.
What's it like as a woman working in engineering, which is historically a pretty male-dominated field?
So I think my area is lucky in the sense that biomedical engineering, it's about 50% female and male. So I never really had this discrimination in any of my classes, or I would say in any of the workforces I've been in. They seem to not at least obviously show it to me. So I haven't felt a lot of discrimination in the male dominance. However, I was last week at a Society of Engineering and Science conference, which was mostly aeronautical and mechanical engineers, and I was the anomaly in the sense that there were probably only 10% or 20% females, and the rest of the conference was males. However, maybe I'm blind to this gender indifference, but it didn't seem like there was much of a difference.
Do you think that biomedical engineering as a field is any different from, say, electrical engineering or mechanical engineering, where there isn't the same degree of representation of women?
Different in, I guess, can you clarify that?
Is it different in the kinds of projects people choose to work on, or the way they do their work, or anything like that?
Well, most definitely the career is different. I mean, electrical engineering, they're doing different projects compared to biomedical engineering. As far as maybe the twist or the flavor of these projects, I don't know if there's a, I mean, usually there's a problem, there's a need, and that drives the project. So if there's not a problem, then the project is just a thought experiment, which can lead to new technology and new devices. But usually later on.
What do you think it's really important for students who are thinking about going into engineering to know about engineering in general or biomedical engineering in particular?
So engineering in general and biomedical engineering in particular, there's always a problem. So identifying the problem that you're trying to solve is key. So in biomedical engineering, that could be a disease or imaging, or if you're noticing that a lot of football players are having concussions, how can we better design this helmet to come up with a better outcome, less concussions? So I'd say that is really what engineers should be aware of, is what is the problem? What are some possible solutions? How can we go about creating the solution?
Yeah. When engineers are going about determining what problems that they're going to work on and how they're going to come up with good solutions for those problems, how important do you think it is for them to think about the ethical and social consequences of solving those problems in those particular ways?
Yeah, so that's, I would say, a fairly unlooked, at least in the beginning, area, is how if I create this device, how is that going to affect the greater community as a whole? So I think that is something that we are becoming more aware of, especially in the genomic sense, using stem cells and just other devices that may affect the community. And for example, if you make an app that's only for smartphones, you know, does that only, or for iPhones, does that only affect, you know, the elite, or can it also third world countries have access to this app? So just really kind of identifying the social implications of the work and trying to make it as broadly available as possible from the beginning is the best way, best approach.
What do you think can be done either in engineering education or general education to help students learn to think about those things in that way?
So in the beginning, before students graduate, that's really when they need to be aware of this. And we have courses for ethics, ethics in engineering. So I would say that's a good way just to bring awareness.
Great. Could you talk about a particular example of mentoring a student that you found was a very rewarding moment for you?
So I would say recently a student, she is very intelligent, and she has a strong drive to succeed and better science. And so if the student has a drive, it makes the job a lot easier. But basically, I just showed her all the opportunities from my past experience, the grants that are out there that she can apply to, the equipment that we have in the lab, and she just kind of, and all the projects to enable a better diagnosis tool by doing experiments. And she just took off and just really accomplished a lot. And we were able to publish the work, and she was able to present on the work. So I think she's going to go far, and it's kind of rewarding from an advisor standpoint to see your students succeed and know that they're going to do well and they're going to accomplish great discoveries in the realm of science.
Thank you so much for speaking to us today, Heather. To learn more about Heather Hainga and her work, please visit the Creative Disturbance website at creativedisturbance.org, where you can also find future editions of the FemGeneers podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you.